This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Underlying Purpose of Annapolis. This is part two, Mass Repression in Palestine and an Expanded Regional War. Construction will continue at full flow, and our friends must be told this. These are the words of Israeli Strategic Affairs Minister Avigdor Lieberman, a deputy prime minister. He said this on public television in the Zionist state on Tuesday, December 4th, only 1 week after the Annapolis conference. The Annapolis conference at which President Bush stated, quote, "We meet to lay the foundation for the establishment of a new nation, a democratic Palestinian state that will live side by side with Israel in peace and security," end quote. Only 1 week after Annapolis, 44 nations attended what was to be a seminal conference, a conference in which it was promised that a negotiated settlement between the Zionist state and the Palestinian people would take place by the end of 2008. And yet, on December 4th, Israel invited bids, that is, tenders, to build more than 300 new housing units at Har Homa, a settlement area in the annexed East Jerusalem. This is the first settlement expansion since the Annapolis conference. Ralph?
Well, to put this in its perspective, Maya, Avigdor Lieberman is not only deputy prime minister, he's the strategic affairs minister. This is the man who has called for the Palestinian prisoners to be put in boxes and dumped in the Dead Sea. This is the man who's called for the mass transfer of all Palestinian Arabs from inside the Green Line. This is the man who's called for bombing the Aswan Dam in Egypt, and that some long time ago in a casual remark. This is the figure who is indeed beating the drums for an immediate attack on Iran, which we will deal with next week. But what I want to state as well is that Prime Minister Ehud Olmert is not only dependent on Avigdor Lieberman as his strategic partner, with his far-rightist party Beit Hanu as a key part of the government alliance, but Olmert was the mayor of Jerusalem, who was in conjunction with Lieberman intensifying the construction of settlements all over Palestine, and in particular crowding and clearing out the Palestinians from Jerusalem and all the surrounding area. These are the very figures who go to Annapolis with their prattling nonsense about a peace settlement, the first predicate of which is the Palestinian obligation to implement phase one of the roadmap, which calls for the total subjugation of the Palestinian population, repression on a scale that prohibits any resistance, and I don't mean armed resistance, just mobilizations, demonstrations, public meetings, opposition to the Zionist encroachments, the refusal to permit the return of refugees, and the subjugation of the Palestinian population within the Green Line, the denial of their existence as a population by the declaration that Israel is a Jewish state, which means that the 25% of the population that remains of the Arab Palestinians ethnically cleansed are deprived of even the pretense of any elementary rights.
Ralph, we should note that Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority and a key figure in the Palestinian Liberation Organization, its chairman, that Mahmoud Abbas applauded President Bush when he said the words, quote, "The Palestinian state would be a homeland for Palestinians just as Israel was the homeland for the Jews."
He not only did that, Maya, but Mahmoud Abbas called Annapolis the enduring legacy of George Bush, his legacy of peace and his legacy of wisdom and his legacy of a positive future. This was the encomium of the puppet Mahmoud Abbas, the creature of repression, the instrument of Zionist and imperial control of the population at the initiation of the conference at Annapolis. Meanwhile,
and it has to be said, Ralph, that it's key that even when the PLO gave up the Palestinian Charter, the charter, which stated explicitly that the call for a democratic and secular Palestine, in which people would live there as equal citizens and without respect to ethnicity, race, religion. And it is the giving up of the Palestinian charter, which was the key to any of the meetings that took place, be it Oslo or Madrid or the second Camp David.
Or Jericho.
Or now Annapolis. This entire series, the Mitchell Plan, all these plans that have been, this charade, this facade that has been going on for years and years now, all this has been taking place with one and one purpose only, and that is to lay in stone, what were the words of President George Bush, the homeland for the Jews, this apartheid state, this benchmark for the United States, as you said, for an expanded regional war, you must have your military, your occupying military in the Middle East. And that is the one and only purpose for the United States of this Zionist state.
Maya, so, since you mentioned the charter, let's take a brief moment and let's articulate what it is that the Palestinian movement stood for on behalf of its population. Quote, "We seek the escalation and the mobilization of all the Palestinian popular and educational efforts and their organization and involvement in a Palestinian revolution. We require the achievement of unity for a national struggle among the different groupings of the Palestinian people, between the Palestinian people and the Arab masses, so as to secure the continuation of our revolution, its escalation, and its victory. The liberation of Palestine will provide an atmosphere of safety and tranquility to all, without discrimination of race or color or language or religion or ethnicity. Accordingly, the people of Palestine look to all the world for support. Zionism is a political movement, organically associated with international imperialism, antagonistic to all action for liberation and to progressive movements in the world. It is racist and fanatic in nature, aggressive, expansionist, and colonial in its aims, and fascist in its methods. Israel is the instrument of the Zionist movement and a geographical base for world imperialism, placed strategically in the midst of the Arab homeland to combat the hopes of the Arab nation for liberation, unity, and progress. Israel is a constant source of threat vis-a-vis the peace in the Middle East and the whole world. Since the liberation of Palestine will destroy a Zionist and imperialist presence and contribute to the establishment and peace in the Middle East, the Palestinian people look for the support of all, the progressive and peaceful forces, and urge them all, irrespective of affiliation or belief, to offer the Palestinian people, all of them, aid and support in their just struggle for the liberation of their homeland," unquote. That is what has been eradicated. That is what has been repudiated. That is what has been abandoned as the predicate, the requirement for this charade of negotiations, which, as we say, have nothing to do with peace and everything to do with pacification, which means subjugation and the subordination of the Palestinian movement to the master Zionist settler population state and imperialism, the controller and funder and armor of the entire process.
And, Ralph, we have to note that the Palestinian struggle has been key throughout the Middle East. And I'd like to refer now to the 1936 uprising of the Palestinian people. Yes, to go all the way back to 1936. Because if you look at the 1936 uprising and the suppression of the 1936 uprising, you see the role of the Palestinian population in a movement that would sweep throughout the Arab world. And I'm reading now from The Hidden History of Zionism in the chapter on colonizing Palestine, the section on the 1936 uprising, where it says, "Loss of land and repression heightened Palestinian awareness of the fate intended for them and fueled a great uprising which lasted from 1936 to 1939. The revolt assumed the form of civil disobedience and armed insurrection. Peasants left their villages to join fighting units which were formed in the mountains. Arab nationalists from Syria and Jordan soon entered the struggle. The decision to withhold taxes was taken May 7, 1936, at a conference attended by 150 delegates representing all sectors of the population, and a general strike swept Palestine. British reaction was immediate and harsh. At that time, Palestine was under the British mandate. Martial law was declared July 30, 1936, approximately 5 months after the uprising that had begun, and widespread repression was unleashed. Anyone suspected of organizing or sympathizing with the general strike or other resistance was detained. Houses were blown up throughout Palestine. A large section of the city of Jaffa was destroyed by the British on June 18, 1936, rendering 6,000 people homeless. Homes as well in the surrounding communities were demolished. Britain sent large numbers of troops to Palestine to quell the revolt. It was estimated that 20,000 British troops were sent to Palestine at that time. By the end of 1937 and the beginning of 1938, however, British forces were losing control to the armed popular revolt. It's at this point that the British began to rely on the Zionists, who provided them with a unique resource that had never been tapped in any of their colonies. That is, a local force which had made common cause with British colonialism and was highly mobilized against the indigenous population. If before this the Zionists had handled many of the tasks of reprisal, they now played a larger role in the escalated repression, which was to include mass arrests, assassinations, and executions. In 1938, 5,000 Palestinians were imprisoned, of whom 2,000 were sentenced to long terms of imprisonment. 148 people were executed by hanging, and over 5,000 homes were demolished. This is in 1938. Zionist forces were integrated with British intelligence and became the police and forces of draconian British rule. So you see here the role of the Zionists, going back to 1936, where in collaboration with imperialism, then British colonialism, they were the bulwark. They were used to suppress the Palestinian insurrection. The Palestinian insurrection, which included militants from Syria and Jordan, and would have swept throughout the Arab world. Ralph?
Yes, and it was the collaborators of the day, the feudal effendi, and their counterparts in the Arab states, which betrayed the struggle of the population within Palestine. O Palestine, everything follows from that betrayal. And that betrayal is well in place today through Mahmoud Abbas and what farce called the Palestinian Authority, run by the Central Intelligence Agency and the Zionist state itself. Here, Maya, to bring us back to full fold, the 8th of December, 2007, Housing Minister Zev Boehm stated Saturday that nothing will prevent Israel from following through on a plan to build 300 new housing units in the East Jerusalem neighborhood of Har Homa. Indeed, Secretary of State Rice should be blessed for her efforts in the relaunching of a peace process, Boehm stated, but that peace process will not be tied to the cessation of construction in Jerusalem. Jerusalem to be ethnically cleansed on an intensive scale in the aftermath of this charade at Annapolis. Nothing will prevent our construction there, Boehm declared. This is the Housing Minister, Zev Boehm, on the 8th of December, just as nothing will prevent the construction of any of housing in any other location of Eretz Israel. What is Eretz Israel? Let me remind you, brothers and sisters, 1947, before the United Nations Committee on the Fate of Palestine, the defining moment when the Nakba, the great catastrophe, was initiated through the United Nations with the partitioning of Palestine over the heads of the population. When the Jewish Agency presented its map of what was the land of Israel, Eretz Israel, based upon the diaries of Theodor Herzl, when Rabbi Fishman in formal session declared that the land of Israel included all of Palestine, all of Lebanon, all of Jordan, one-third of Arabia, Egypt up to the Nile, including Cairo, two-thirds of Iraq, 40% of Syria, the southern tier of Turkey, and Kuwait. Eretz Israel, nothing will prevent the construction of housing and settlements anywhere in Eretz Israel, declared Housing Minister Ze'ev Boim in the aftermath of Annapolis. Yes, Maya, please.
Yes, the organization Peace Now has done an analysis of the construction that is taking place. As we speak, construction is taking place in 88 settlements and 10 outposts. And what does this mean in terms of master plans? This was analyzed in December 2006. Monitoring settlements and GIS units by the Applied Research Institute in Jerusalem, the ARIJ, and they produced a report, Geopolitical Status in Jerusalem Governance. And within it, they talk about Har Homa. Har Homa is on Jebel Abu Rahman. Jebel Abu Rahman, that means mountain. It's a hillside. And if you look at the topo map of Jerusalem, you can see this mountain, Jebel Abu Rahman, and that is Har Homa. So what the Israelis do is they go to the top of the mountain, they start a settlement there, and then they move down the hill. We saw this as we were traveling throughout the West Bank on our recent visit in the spring.
And we stayed for a month in the Heshe, the Palestinian refugee camp outside of Bethlehem, where the most militant of the Palestinian resistance was born and raised and based.
And what you have to understand about Har Homa and the other settlements that are part of East Jerusalem is that they move into the area of Bethlehem. So what the ARIJ has noted about Har Homa is that two settlements have been planned. The master plan that was established by the Israeli Jerusalem Municipality, this is Master Plan Jerusalem 2000, indicated schemes for two new settlements in the vicinity of the existing Har Homa settlement. In other words, they start with the outpost of Har Homa, they build it up on Abu Rahman, and then they expand, and now they've expanded with these two satellite settlements of Har Homa, and then they bring them all together. The first set was to the southeast, and the second to the northwest. You can see what they're doing here. The two new settlements will have an approximate area of 1,080 dunams, 530 dunams, which belong to An Numan village in the Bethlehem governorate. The master plan also indicates a residential area of Har Homa on Jebel Abu Rahman, that's the mountain of Abu Rahman, that will expand to 1,410 dunams. This is an increase to 28% of the original size that it was when the report was written, which was 400 dunams. Har Homa and the new settlements will eventually comprise 2,500 dunams of land. Now, a dunam is 1,000 square meters or 10 acres. That means the Har Homa expansion will include 25,000 acres of land, which is an enormous amount of land in the Palestine. Ralph?
Yes, Maya. What you're describing so succinctly is the precise method that was the governing modality for the expulsion of the Palestinian people since the 19th century. In the 1880s, in the 1890s, at the turn of the 20th century, this is what the Zionists did. They would go into a populated area of Palestinians, and they would set up a wooden tower surrounded by machine guns. They might have only six or seven people associated with tents attached to that tower. They would then declare that a Jewish settlement, and it would expand out from there. Then they would set up another tower a few miles away, Same circumstance. Surrounded by automatic weapons, there would be a wooden tower and a handful of people declaring themselves a settlement. And then they would expand into the area, expelling the population as they went, seizing more land. It's the precise modality through which all of Palestine was sequestered and conquered, and it was predicated upon the massacre of the Palestinian population in the surrounding area and their expulsion. Israel to build homes in East Jerusalem, an article by Aaron Heller of the Associated Press on December 4th. It describes the building of 300 new homes in East Jerusalem that we've just been discussing, 307 units in Har Homa. And then it makes a very important addition. Israel, and I'm quoting, makes a clear distinction between the West Bank and Jerusalem, said Mark Regev, spokesman for Prime Minister Ehud Olmert. Israel has never made a commitment to limit our sovereignty in Jerusalem. Implementation of the roadmap does not and will not apply to Jerusalem. Now, brothers and sisters, when they talk Jerusalem, they talk the entire surrounding area. They talk everything up to Bethlehem and Hebron.
Well, Ralph, they definitely include Abu Dis, and they go into what is considered the governorate, that is the suburban area of Bethlehem. And it's not just with Har Homa. They have, if you look on a map of the Israeli plans, the plans for Jerusalem that were made in 2000, the settlement in Carmel Mufti, which is expanded into Al-Sheikh Jarrah, a new settlement in Bab al-Sahira, in David, a settlement in Silwan, the Mal Hazetzim in the neighborhood of Ras al-Amud, the Kidmat Zion in which has moved into Abu Dis, the Nofzion settlement in Jabal al-Mukabir, and again the two settlements in Har Homa. And this is all expanded out from the old city, all expanded out
and
into that area.
As we traveled the area, as we lived there for 5 weeks in May, what did you experience? That the roads are confined to the Israeli settlers, that the Palestinians have to take these dirt paths that a four-wheel drive vehicle cannot navigate, that all the surrounding hills and land is being encroached upon by Israeli bulldozers and tanks? That's the process, brothers and sisters. What a charade this is. Israel's defense minister declared in the aftermath of Olmert stating that Israel had made no commitment to limit its sovereignty in what they call Jerusalem. And here is what Defense Minister Ehud Barak stated. We will kill those who carry out any resistance, he stated. And in a rare interview, Ehud Barak of the Labor Party declared on Army Radio that they would aggressively chase down any who are suspected of organizing opposition to Israeli policy. And he stated, now is the time to kill those who resist us. This is Barak. Early Tuesday, this was amplified with an attack in central Gaza. Barak, the former military chief, has repeatedly stated that Israel is on the verge of invading Gaza. And listen, I'm quoting still from the article in the Associated Press, republished, but interestingly, in the State of Columbia, South Carolina, which often carries news about the Palestinian struggle. Barak, the military chief, stated that Israel is on the verge of invading Gaza. Quote, analysts have speculated that Barak was waiting until the conclusion of the Annapolis conference. The moment has not arrived yet, but we are preparing for a wide range of possibilities, and every day that passes, we get closer to a wide-scale operation in Gaza, quote-unquote, Defense Minister Barak, the charade of Annapolis, brothers and sisters.
Yes, Ralph, and we'll return to Gaza in further depth in the second part of our show. But right now, let's return once again to the issue of the settlement expansion throughout the West Bank. That is what is called by the Zionist Judea and Samaria. The settler population has doubled in the last 15 years to 250,000 people, and then there are another approximately 250,000 in Jerusalem. And what we have here is this, you have to remember, it's the last 15 years has been the so-called years of discussion and negotiation between the Zionist state and the Palestinian authorities, be it the PLO or the Palestinian Authority that was created with the so-called semi-autonomy for the Palestinian people. In other words, they can handle their garbage collection. In an article that appeared December 7th in the Washington Times, Wider West Bank Settlements Proposed, an article by Joshua Mitnick writing from Tel Aviv, and he writes, Israeli ministers are mulling a proposal that will allow a, quote, massive expansion of Jewish settlements in the West Bank and retroactively legalize dozens of settler outposts, said a former Israeli state attorney who oversaw a government study on Jewish building in the disputed territory. Now, this was a study that was authored by Israel's Justice Ministry, and it consists of a set of guidelines for building in the West Bank. It's going to be taken up by the cabinet, but just last month, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert recommitted Israel to a so-called peace process that would curtail settlement activity. Well, that doesn't matter, according to the state attorney and the Justice Ministry. Talia Sasson, a former state attorney, had authored the critical report on the outposts of the government in 2005. And while she said that if the proposal was accepted, this is proposal to authorize, legalize the settlement outposts that exist, and also to create a mode to expand all the existing settlements, she said this would be a clear and unequivocal violation of Israel's commitment that made to President of the United States that the illegal outposts in the West Bank and the expansion of existing settlements would stop. Not so, say the other ministers.
Right.
According to the rest of the cabinet, they say that they can do what they want. And in fact, they have created major loopholes in Israeli law.
Well, Maya, it's a very important article and a very important clarification of what's involved here, because as you've been describing, Talia Sasson stated that these loopholes are being exploited to facilitate settlement expansion, and they are what she calls, quote, the rule rather than the exception. Both the letter and the draft proposal were made public by Israel's Channel 10 television news. The Justice Ministry has refused to comment, calling the proposal an internal document. But what is the reality here? The Israeli prime ministers, over the past 15 years, have facilitated the doubling of the settlers to over 250,000 by today. And what is their target under this very plan we're describing? 500,000, 800,000. This process, every time there is a charade, such as that at Annapolis, under the cover of that talky-talk, designed to pacify the population through repression, they double and triple their expansion plans. That's the dynamic. That's the history. That's the legacy. That's the genocidal intent.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Underlying Purpose of Annapolis. This is part two of our program, Not Peace But Pacification, the Imperial Charade at Annapolis. Today's program, Mass Repression in Palestine and an Expanded Regional War. Ralph, we've been discussing the recent tender, that is the call for bids to build 300 homes, more than 300, 307 homes in Har Homa, an outpost settlement in East Jerusalem. I think it's time to discuss what the Zionists are doing to rally the population to the total occupation of Jerusalem, the removal of the Palestinian population. They've already forbid people who live in the West Bank and Gaza, many of them, to enter Jerusalem. And let's see what the Zionists are doing to rally around the flag, so to speak. An article that appeared in Haaretz on December 7th, thousands come to Jerusalem to protest plans to divide capital.
And this is Nadav Shragai, the Haaretz correspondent, and it's important to note here that Haaretz, which is a conservative Zionist paper, is unvarnished in its exposure of what is really underlying this process.
That's right, because Haaretz considers itself liberal in terms of the Zionist state, but you are quite right, Ralph. It is a conservative paper.
It is, in essence, the New York Times apologia for the established Zionist order, and it rationalizes it and it gives it its entire state justifications at every turn. And here this article makes this very clear.
Now, let's see what Shragai says. Quote, "It was with a sense of religious fervor that the thousands of people who came Thursday to the Jerusalem International Convention Center sang Shuli Natan's Jerusalem of Gold. They came to protest against plans to divide Israel's capital." Let's look exactly what he's saying. To divide Israel's capital, the self-imposed capital of Jerusalem. And it was a very important to note that the U.S. Embassy used to be in Tel Aviv, and it was under Bill Clinton that Jerusalem became the recognized capital of the Zionist state. Shragai continues, "After they finished singing with their eyes closed, gently rocking from side to side, the crowd enjoyed a laser light show projected on a giant screen. The same show had been projected a week before at the city's southeast, overlooking the old city. In the show, the lasers simulated Qassam rockets crashing in from East Jerusalem, and each time the crowd cringed in their seats. The stereo system added sounds of destructions. The organizers of the One Jerusalem event prepared very well for the event. Yeshua Mor Yosef, One Jerusalem's public relations man, said that opinion polls and surveys clearly indicated that the most effective tool to keep Jerusalem united was the Jewish majority's deep connection with the city. 50 buses of participants in this spectacular event were brought in to the One Jerusalem event. This is part of an effort that includes tour guides with lectures in areas on history, poetry, heritage, security. The common theme, of course, Jerusalem and the need to keep it united. Ralph?
Maya, who was there? The politicians who came to the event conformed to the mood of the conference. Likud head Benjamin Netanyahu told the crowd, "The people of Israel did not sacrifice their soldiers so that the government will give away Jerusalem." He accused the government of giving up both on security by calling for the pulling out of the Arab neighborhoods of Jerusalem and of heritage by abandoning the Temple Mount in the old city. Likud member of the Knesset, Reuven Rivlin, stated that the days of the British Mandate, when Jews could not blow the shofar, the Wailing War, were over. And Zeev Elkin of Kadima quoted statements made by Prime Minister Ariel Sharon and Ehud Olmert about their undying commitment to an exclusively Jewish Jerusalem. And the Labor Party, Yoav Marciano, read Psalms and stated that David Ben-Gurion would have diagnosed those who want to abandon any part of Jerusalem as suffering from insanity. Excuse me.
One Jerusalem, Ralph, was formed 7 years ago. 7 years ago. Now, 7 years ago, Ehud Olmert, the prime minister, was mayor of Jerusalem, and he supported One Jerusalem wholeheartedly. In fact, the events 7 years ago had culminated in the Ani Nishba, that is, I swear.
This was a mass rally.
A mass rally outside the old city's walls. And who led that I swear, the Ani Nishba? None other than today's prime minister, then mayor of Jerusalem, Ehud Olmert.
Ehud Olmert, the prime minister and the supposed partner for Mahmoud Abbas, the toad of Bush in Annapolis. Israel seeks a united Jerusalem under its sovereignty. That means the further expulsion of Palestinians and the expansion of settlements.
Ralph, let's discuss now a book, a new book that has been published by none other than Haaretz Reporters. And I want to thank our friend Richard Stark for sending us a review of this book. The review is entitled The Wild, Wild West of the Israeli Settler Movement. And the book itself is called Lords of the Land, The War Over Israel Settlements in the Occupied Territories, 1967 to 2007. It's published by Nation Books. It's authored by Professor Idith Zertel and Akiva Eldor. Now, Idith Zertel is the chief political columnist, and Akiva Eldor is an editorial writer for Haaretz. They are supporters of the Zionist state. Now, let's note, they are supporters of the Zionist state. But what they do in this book is expose the methods and the history of the Zionist occupation, not only of the West Bank and Gaza, but actually of the Zionist state itself.
Yes, ma'am.
Ralph, I'd like to note here, Ralph is in New York in the WBAI studios, and I'm here in California. So if cross each other, it's because we're 3,000 miles apart.
Yes, Maya, my dear, but let me just point out something about Lord of the Land and the Wild, Wild West, which is a very important expose and documentation. It's a book, by the way, that's about to be published, which lays out the real dynamics of the subjugation of the Palestinian population. A detailed study of the development of the settler movement in Israel and how it is closely tied to government policy and Zionist ideology. It's not just a question of fanatical Zionist or Jewish religious cults. Let's be clear about this. This is deeply embedded within the entire dynamic of the Zionist settler movement, how bit by bit the West Bank is being swallowed by Israel as part of a larger, well-calculated plan. 270,000 settlers in the West Bank, 220,000 in the neighborhoods around Jerusalem, already 490,000 settlers imposed on Palestine what is the West Bank, brothers and sisters? It's less than 17% of historic Palestine. And already, and there are 2.4 million Palestinians in the West Bank, and by the end of 2006, They had imposed 270,000 Jewish settlers, as I mentioned, another 220,000 in the areas surrounding Jerusalem. Since the withdrawal of Israel from Gaza in 2005, over 20,000 additional settlers were added to the West Bank. 40% of the settlements in the West Bank were on private land owned by the Palestinians and seized from them. 130 additional settlements established wholly on these lands that the state itself had determined to seize. The settlers took control of these lands. It is the state that confiscated them and facilitated the settlement in contravention of all the supposed declarations at these so-called peace conferences.
Ralph, Lords of the Land quotes a settler who in 1988 invoked a comparison to the conquest of Indian land by U.S. settlers. And he said, quote, "Everyone can do whatever he wants. It's a different planet. You are the law. They used to say the Wild West as a joke. Today this is no longer a joke. We go out at night, cover the license plates, go to the nearby Arab village, and the fun begins." And he describes, in Lord of the Lands, they go into one particular episode in April 1988, and people may remember this. It received much attention in the press. That was when a group of Israeli teenage hikers, with armed settlers as guards, were confronted by young Palestinians near the West Bank Jewish settlement of Elon Mora, One of the armed settlers began firing his guns. Two of the teenaged Palestinians were killed, and one of the Israeli teens, Tirza Porat, the daughter of one of the founders of the settlement, Elon Mora, she was killed. Now, the story was soon spread that she had been killed by a rock that had been thrown by a Palestinian. In response, the settlers and the government, the Zionist government, blamed the Palestinians from the village of Beita, which is near Elon Mora, and in fact, Elon Mora is established on land from Beita. Tirza Porat's funeral was an occasion for the unleashing of the fundamentalist religious wrath. Quote, at moments, the funeral turned into a near lynching. In the presence of Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir, his deputy David Levy, and Minister Ariel Sharon, Rabbi Chaim Druckman called for wiping Beita off the face of the earth. Minister of Religious Affairs Zevulun Hammer followed suit and also demanded that Beita be destroyed and that a settlement named after Tirza be established immediately in Samaria, which is the Hebrew name for that portion of the West Bank. Lord of vengeance, our God, Lord of vengeance, appear, cried Benny Katsova, who was the leader of the settlement movement. The prime minister said, quote, every act of murder strengthens the Jewish people, unites it and connects it to this land, and deepens its roots here. What the truth of the matter is something else, and this is discussed in this book. The truth is that Tirza had not been killed by a stone thrown by the Palestinian youth. In fact, she was killed by a bullet fired by the settler vigilante Roman Aldovi, who had shot wildly, who had been accompanying the teenagers on their hike, and he had shot wildly at the Palestinian teenagers. Now, this was the conclusion of an official government investigation into the incident, but it is something that has never appeared in the press.
And let's look at this carefully, Maya. Lords of the Land spells it out. Menachem Begin and the leader of the Likud, by the way, Begin, who had led the massacre of Palestinians in 1947 and 1948 with the Irgun, Der Yassin, beginning of the clearing of the population through slaughter from one end of Palestine to the other. Begin proposed a plan to build townships with settler Jewish inhabitants in Jericho, Hebron, Bethlehem, Nablus, Tulkarem, Jenin, and Kalkia. All of these were major Palestinian towns in the West Bank. By 1968, a special committee appointed by Defense Minister Moshe Dayan of the Labor Party recommended expanding on Begin's proposals and elaborating upon the Jewish settlement or the Zionist settlement in Hebron. Then Government Labor Minister Yigal Alon, a so-called liberal of the Labor Party and another commander of the Zionist slaughtering militia in 1948, became the advocate for the settlers inside the government with advice, material, and weapons and the seal of approval of the Labor Party. And they began an expanded settlement program. So indeed, you see, all wings of the Zionist state are conspirators in this process of eliminating the Palestinian population. The tried and true Zionist outlook, and I'm quoting, was copied into the context of Hebron and dates back to the days of the tower and stockade settlements of the 1930s that I was describing before. Here it is laid out in Lords of the Land. The settlement established overnight of controlling Jewish settlements by elevating observation points surrounded by fences and walls in the heart of an Arab population. The stockade and tower method is explained in detail. Establish a tiny settlement with a single stockade of wood and gravel and a wooden tower topped by searchlights and machine guns. Dozens of the settlements were established along the contours of the Arab population. Today, the Palestinian land in the West Bank is being chopped up left and right. expanding settlements that seize Palestinian land, construction of a system of highways that connects Jewish settlements from which Palestinians are forbidden. On top, the physical security walls built around the West Bank, already intruding well into Palestinian land, cutting off the villages, preventing the population from cultivating the land, effectively annexing all Palestinian land. For example, on October 9, 2007, Israel appropriated 270 acres of land near Abu Dis, which we've just been discussing, near a section of the separation wall that already extends 60 square kilometers into Palestine. What did they have to do to accomplish that? 18,147 Palestinian homes demolished, reduced to rubble, eliminated from existence. This week in Annapolis, Maryland, this article continues, it is worth keeping in mind that none of the negotiations between the Palestinian government and the Israeli government and the Palestinian leadership under the direction of the United States have ever resulted in any effort to curtail, let alone reverse, the expansion of Jewish settlements on Palestinian land. The document of joint understanding released by the participants of Annapolis does not even mention the settlements. That's the underlying dynamic. That's the real purpose of Annapolis, to provide a cover for the full expansion of this entire process of the elimination of the Palestinian population from the West Bank, even as they had been from Israel itself. And lest we be in any doubt about this, brothers and sisters, let me refer here to the process as described in an article that Maya and I prepared many years ago. Madrid is not the road to peace. Because in that article, we show that the entire plan for the colonization of the West Bank and Gaza was already well advanced right at the time that the Madrid conference was undertaken. And let me mention as well, one of the constant pieces of propaganda that is associated with these plans is the claim that the Palestinian people, Palestinians themselves, support this pacification process. In Middle East Journal, Volume 42, Number 1, Winter 1988, the Palestinian scholar Hisham Ahmed in Arab American Affairs did a detailed study of the Palestinian population sentiments. 77.9% of the Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza at that time supported, quote, the establishment of a secular and democratic state in all of historic Palestine. Only 16% favored the establishment of an independent Palestinian state on the West Bank and Gaza Strip, and that under the predicate that West Bank and Gaza Strip would not be subject to colonial settlement itself. 80.6%, four-fifths of the Palestinian people, rejected outright the implementation of UN Resolution 242 as a resolution of the question of Palestine. 91% of the Palestinian population rejected these UN resolutions that treat the Palestinians as refugees and call for some form of self-rule in the West Bank and Gaza. There is an overall massive rejection by the Palestinian people of these formulations of Bantustanization in Palestine. 68.8% said the most effective means of resistance to this occupation was armed struggle. 81% were college educated. 74.3% were under the age of 30. Of these young militants, 79.7%, 4 out of 5 had been imprisoned or had a member of their immediate family imprisoned. Land had been confiscated from 77.4% of them. 87.2% of these youth believe acts of force against the occupation were justifiable. 92.9% were college educated. 94% were directly affected by the permanent occupation. beaten, wounded, injured, imprisoned, or deprived of a killed family member. That's the reality on the ground then and now, brothers and sisters, and that's the real meaning of this process of pacification that is called a Annapolis Conference.
And, Ralph, I'd like to close with something that illustrates this today as we speak. On the day of Annapolis, there were demonstrations which brought thousands of people onto the streets of Ramallah, Hebron, Tulkarm, Nablus, and in Gaza in defiance of the Palestinian Authority's attempt to silence the people's voice. And this was a crucial moment for Palestine. And I'm reading from an article by Jamal Juma that appeared in the Electronic Intifada December 2nd, 2007. The Electronic Intifada is on the Internet. And this demonstration was organized by the popular committees of the refugee camps and over 150 civil society organizations and representatives who called for upholding fundamental principles of the struggle, including right of return for refugees, the plight of Jerusalem as the Palestinian capital, the right to the land, and most of all, refusing recognition of Israel as a Jewish state, which, as Jamal Juma says, legitimizes the Zionist ideology of colonialism, racism, and ethnic cleansing. What's most important to note here is that these demonstrations were not to take place, according to the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas. They tried to prevent people from asserting their rights, first by banning the demonstrations and then by attacking the demonstrators. That is, the Palestinian security forces were called out to attack Palestinians who were demonstrating, and they used tear gas, batons, and military jeeps. So here we have the Palestinian security forces as the armed instrument of the Zionist state.
What is the first?
Opposing the mass mobilization and in a peaceful mobilization of Palestinian people who object to the colonizing policy, the eradication of the Palestinian people as a people. Ralph, last words.
This is the very predicate of the Annapolis charade. The first requirement for the Palestinians is to implement phase one of the roadmap. Phase one of the roadmap, before anything else can proceed, means eliminating all resistance. The Palestinian Authority must assume responsibility for repressing the Palestinian population, for not just rounding up those who are involved in armed struggle, but rounding up all those who are mobilized to assert their rights. Last Tuesday's demonstration brought tens of thousands of Palestinians into the streets of Ramallah, Hebron, Tulkarm, Nablus, and Gaza in total defiance of the Palestinian Authority. The popular committees of the refugee camps, over 150 civil society organizations, representatives of all the mass organizations in Palestine, calling for upholding the fundamental principles of, quote, of our struggle, the right of our people to return, the right to Jerusalem as a Palestinian capital, the right to our land, the refusal to recognize Israel as a Jewish state that would legitimize the Zionist ideology of colonialism, racism, and ethnic cleansing, and effectively exonerate Israel from the crimes of the Nakba. We are fighting for the upholding of the fundamental principles of our national struggle, respecting the democratic right of the people to express our views in protests, in meetings, in organization on the streets. The Palestine Authority is attempting to prevent our people from asserting their rights. They ban our demonstrations. They attack us with tear gas, batons, and military jeeps. Our actions are an expression of our voices raised against Annapolis, defying the ban on demonstrations. Our popular committees and the representatives of our organizations and political parties throw down this challenge to this so-called Palestinian leadership. As the pressure on you grows, so our grassroots anti-normalization movement grows too.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Underlying Purpose of Annapolis, Part 2, Mass Repression in Palestine and an Expanded Regional War. It will be up on our website, www.takingaimradio.com, and you can reach us at takingaim@pacbell.net. We'll be with you next week.
Tiki tiki no biniya, ta tan ta chinda karo.